I'm Bill Delaney.
I'm Robin Young.
It's Here and Now.
U.S. and British ground troops are moving further into Iraq, reportedly taking control of the port city of Umm Qasr and two strategic western airfields. CNN is reporting that an Iraqi boat laden with explosives was intercepted in or near the Persian Gulf. And although coalition forces have been facing mostly light opposition, a Marine became the first casualty of war when the 1st Marine Expeditionary Force came under fire crossing from Kuwait into Iraq. BBC reporter Adam Minot was embedded with the unit at that time.
We are now retreating. U.S. forces are now in not headlong retreat, but fairly rapid retreat back towards the border, having encountered obviously much stiffer resistance than we'd expected.
And as we said, that resistance led to the death, the first U.S. casualty in the war, the death of a Marine. Retired U.S. Air Force General Tad Ulstrom has been following day two of the war. He joins us in the studio. General, welcome.
Thank you very much. Nice to be here.
Well, nice to have you. We should say that CNN is reporting that there are, again, sirens blaring in Baghdad and signs of anti-aircraft fire, so we'll keep an eye on that. But in the meantime, your sense of the progress of the war?
There are so many aspects to look at, but if you look at the air aspect first, it's really been dominated by a couple periods of strikes in the Baghdad area and certainly a large amount of support that is going to our forces that are crossing into the border towards Umm Qasr and to Basra. But I would say that that's going maybe not as we had envisioned, but it seems to be going quite well. And as we hear the sirens in Baghdad, the suspicion is that those B-52s that were reported to have left from England may very well be arriving in theater. It certainly is. Nightfall is there, and we can expect continuing strikes from the air side.
Well, you're talking about air activity. What's the significance of Turkey continuing to deny the U.S. use of Turkish airspace?
This continues to be maybe the biggest question mark and maybe one of the most serious problems that we have. We can already see in the north what I think is the impact of not having had that access with ground forces and air. Certainly, the strike aircraft may not be as big an issue as being able to bring in special forces, to bring in other folks by air to those airfields that are indeed available to us. Without seeing the presence of U.S. forces on the ground, it is a continuing good sign to the Iraqis that there is no opposition, and not a good sign to the Kurds, who are fully expecting us to be there.
Right. We're seeing some successes, if you will, in U.S. forces liberating, as they would call it, the town of Safwan, right over the border from Kuwait, pulling down signs with the people who live there, signs of Saddam Hussein. But we're also getting reports that the U.S. has been held up just south of Baghdad. Well, not just south, 235 miles southeast, and held up at the town of Nasiriyah, meeting, again, more resistance than they expected. In your very educated opinion, have we really seen what the Iraqi forces can do yet? Have we had a large enough engagement to see what they will do?
No, we have not. And the resistance that we've seen as they proceed towards Baghdad, I think, was fully expected, that there are obvious choke points. There are points on the highways and points en route that must cross rivers. There are populated areas and known places of major Iraqi units in expectation. But we have not seen them in a concentrated defensive position yet.
Yeah. We're going to be hearing from the president in just one second. But your sense, would you say for the coalition forces it's going well?
I think it's going just fine. There are so many unknowns any time that you enter battle. Certainly in the southeast, the successes at Umm Qasr, and it looks like they're proceeding well on to Basra. And in my mind, one of the biggest positive signs so far is that the oil fields seem to be reasonably intact, and we seem to have control in many of the airfields, or oil fields, rather. And that's a positive sign.
Well, General, thank you so much.
Thank you for having me.
General Tad Ulstrom, retired from the U.S. Air Force. He's now director of the National Security Program at the John F. Kennedy School of Government. Well, in his speech to congressional leaders this morning, President Bush praised allied forces.
We're making progress. We will stay on task until we've achieved our objective, which is to rid Iraq of weapons of mass destruction and free the Iraqi people so they can live in a society that is hopeful and democratic and at peace in this neighborhood.
But much now rides on determining the fate of Saddam Hussein. Allied commanders are said to be holding back from unleashing the full force of the so-called shock and awe missile attack on Baghdad. We should say that we are reporting now that explosions are being heard over Baghdad and sirens are going off in that city. We're not quite sure what kind of attack that is. But Allied commanders are saying they're waiting for the full force until they determine whether regime change may have already taken place. Dana Priest is the Washington Post national security correspondent. In an article this morning, she and others wrote about speculation that Saddam Hussein may be injured. Dana, thanks so much for joining us, and tell us the latest word on that theory.
Well, as you can imagine, that's what they're focusing a lot of attention on, trying to figure out what happened. They, as you know, they sent 42 bombs and missiles onto this one target. They were very certain that he and his one or two of his sons were in the bunker at the time that the missiles hit, which was a rather substantial piece of intelligence in order to make that kind of prediction, because, of course, the decision to launch and then sending the missiles at all took a delay of several hours, but they were still convinced after looking at the bomb damage assessment and other things, hearing things, seeing things that they won't describe in great detail, were convinced that he still was in the bunker when it struck. Then there are reports that there were some medical evacuation personnel that came right away. I heard I have to say this is an unconfirmed report that perhaps he was carried out on a stretcher.
Actually, that was Good Morning America actually had an eyewitness report saying that. But again, it's unconfirmed.
That is unconfirmed. That's right.
Yeah.
And the videotapes, which we all were looking at initially yesterday to see was that him, was that not him, turned out to be not. They're not going to answer that question because U.S. government officials told us that they knew that he was making these tapes. It's something he's done for many years, in fact, and that this week alone he had made several tapes with different dates on them, getting ready for just this possibility.
Yeah. And, Dana, with just a few seconds left, do you agree with the thinking that this full force, and again, we should say explosions are now being heard over Baghdad as we speak, and there are alarms going off in that city, but is there a sense that the full force will be held back because if Saddam is injured or perhaps no longer around, that full force might not be necessary?
You know, I think it's going to be very precise because they want to give space to people that could mount the coup and finally do the regime in, which is the whole goal. So even if it's full force, I think it's very precise in what they're aiming at, especially today when they still think there might be a possibility that a coup could be pulled off.
Mm-hmm. Well, Dana, thank you so much.
My pleasure.
Dana Priest, Washington Post national security correspondent and author of the new book, by the way, The Mission.
We turn now to Don North, a freelance journalist attached to the U.S. 101st Airborne Division. They are still in Kuwait. And, Don, tell us what's happening.
Yeah, I'll tell you what I can. I'm with the 101st Airborne, the 1st Brigade. These are old buddies of mine. I first went with the 101st in Vietnam, made a lot of helicopter combat assaults with them, and I'm really looking forward to joining them on some helicopter operations here. But right at this moment, the war seems to be going on without us, but we continue loading ammunition, fueling up, and the word is that we'll probably move out within 1 or 2 days to catch up with the 3rd Division. And then, of course, because we are a helicopter assault company, probably leapfrog over them and possibly helicopter assaults closer into Baghdad.
Now, what is your sense of what's going on in advance of you?
Well, I get that we crossed the border about 9 or 10 hours ago. The Marines, the British and U.S. Marines, just to the north of us, and they've already taken 3 cities up there, the major seaport of Al-Qassam and Al-Basra. They're still getting a little skirmishing there, but they got through virtually unopposed. There were a few artillery duels across the border with some very light mortar fire, but they seized that objective very quickly. On the other front, more to the west, the 3rd Division, the heavy armor boys, the tanks, the Bradleys, are racing across the Iraq southern desert right now. The last report I had is that they're about 150 kilometers into Iraq, headed for Baghdad, spread out on about a 4 or 5 mile broad sphere of advance. And so it seems to be going well. The 3rd Division hasn't ripped any opposition to speak of at all.
Don, what's the sense in the 101st Airborne about how difficult a fight this is going to be, how difficult it's going to be to get to Baghdad?
The 101st Airborne certainly do not underestimate me. They made that mistake in Vietnam, underestimating the Viet Cong. So they're ready for anything. They're not going to underestimate these guys.
Don, thank you. Don North, a freelance journalist with the 101st Airborne, spoke to us on his satellite phone from Kuwait. Much attention is, of course, focused now on Kuwait and on southern Iraq, with a huge U.S. force on the move. But fighting's also reportedly broken out in the north of the country in semi-autonomous Kurdistan, including areas near the region's critical oil fields. From northern Iraq now, we're joined by Christian Science Monitor reporter Cameron Barr. Thanks for joining us, Cameron.
Good to be with you.
Cameron, what's going on, as far as you can see it, in northern Iraq?
Well, on the Kurdish side of northern Iraq, it's still a waiting game where we have a lot of people, many of them journalists, it has to be said, who are waiting to get into some of the areas that you mentioned, Kirkuk and Mosul. There have been some reports of desertions by Iraqi soldiers, but the Iraqi soldiers that I looked at for several hours today weren't deserting by any means. They seem to be actively defending their lines. They have recently laid anti-tank mines along the main road that connects this part of northern Iraq, particularly the city of Sulaymaniyah, through to Kirkuk. And there's no indication here that these people are ready to give up.
Kirkuk and Mosul, those critical oil areas. How, then, are journalists assessing the likelihood of big fighting up there?
Well, it's a very difficult situation. There are a lot of rumors floating around. We have people, sometimes shepherds, sometimes others, who are coming out of Kirkuk with varying reports of people being killed inside the city, of the Iraqis preparing to defend the city. I heard today no reports of any kind of air presence over Kirkuk, and certainly I didn't see anyone who had any direct firsthand knowledge of whatever special forces activity might be taking place at Kirkuk's oil fields.
Cameron, of course, we're talking about the possibility of fighting between Kurdish fighters and the Iraqi army. What about the Turks?
Well, again, it's a fluid situation. In general, broadly speaking, Kurdish anxiety about a Turkish intrusion into northern Iraq is lower now than it was some time ago, a couple of weeks ago. They concluded meetings, the Kurdish leaders and senior American official concluded meetings with the Turks in Ankara over these past few days. I've had some indications from Kurdish officials that they're pleased with the results, but those results do seem to indicate that there will be some limited Turkish military presence in northern Iraq, and that in itself could create an unstable situation.
Cameron Barr, thank you so much for joining us from northern Iraq.
Thank you.
Christian Science Monitor reporter Cameron Barr. For more of his reporting, go to our website, here-now.org.
We just reported to you the beginning of sirens and anti-aircraft in Baghdad. We're now seeing that, according to CNN, the Pentagon is reporting that this is the beginning of shock and awe. We will, of course, come back with full reports on what is going on in the war in Iraq.
There's more coming up here and now.
I'm
Bill Delaney.
I'm Robin Young.
It's Here and Now.
Protests and demonstrations by those for and against the war continue with several fatalities. In Yemen, two protesters were killed in clashes with police outside the U.S. embassy. One protester in San Francisco died accidentally after a fall from the Golden Gate Bridge. And that city's assistant police chief described the scene in the streets yesterday as absolute anarchy. More than 1,000 arrested. Joining us now from San Francisco is Judy Campbell. She's a reporter for public radio station KQED. Hi, Judy.
Hi.
Well, Judy, first, before we ask you the scene there, we should say that CNN has been reporting that events in Baghdad at this moment might be the beginning of the shock and awe campaign that we have been hearing about, the full force of the coalition. We'll keep our listeners posted on that. In the meantime, what are the protesters there saying?
Well, protests are much, much smaller than they were yesterday. I think a lot of it is that many of them were detained until about midnight yesterday. Both police and protesters, you know, maybe just got a couple hours of sleep before coming out again this morning. Numbers are smaller. It's more mellow. Right now I'm in front of a protest. It's a yoga inn, so a lot of people doing yoga on the street. The news that you just said, I have not heard that out on the street yet, so I don't know if anybody knows that, and things may heat up.
Well, as we said,
they do.
As we said, only CNN is reporting that. We're going to keep an eye on that. But so yesterday, it seemed, we just have a few seconds, but it seemed like complete anarchy with people in the streets, as the police chief said. That has dissipated today?
It has dissipated today, and I'd say kind of the extreme anarchy started sort of late in the day. It was actually a very well-organized protest, though a lot of individual groups that would go take over a street corner. When they were arrested, another individual group would come and move in. I think that's why the protest was able to go on for about 13 hours before they could contain it. Today they're trying to shut down the Bechtel building, which they say are war profiteers, and it sounds like about 100 people were just arrested from there today already.
Judy, what was the response of others in San Francisco to the protest, which also stopped traffic and, you know, although of a serious mission, was an inconvenience for a lot of people?
Well, you know, most of the people I talked to who were stopped on the street, a lot of people said they were inconvenienced. They didn't like it, but they understood it. Most of them agreed they didn't support the war. They didn't really like protesters going about this way of doing it. A lot of other people said, you know, we had fair warning. We knew they were going to shut down the city, and we're in our cars anyway, so we can't complain so much.
Well, Judy, thank you so much.
Thank you.
Judy Campbell is a reporter for KQED in San Francisco.
Well, we now have again on the line Cameron Barr of the Christian Science Monitor from northern Iraq. Cameron has some very up-to-the-moment information about the Turks and the Kurds and what the Turks may or may not be allowing the U.S. military to do in their airspace. Cameron, welcome.
Hi, good to be back with you.
Cameron, what have you got? What have you just learned?
Well, we just spoke with Barham Saleh, who is the prime minister of this portion of northern Iraq. He's a member of the Patriotic Union of Kurdistan. He's just back from meetings in Turkey that were designed to sort out the problem of what the Turks would do in northern Iraq and also what sort of access the Americans would have through Turkish airspace. And while it seemed at first that there was a deal out of those meetings, what Dr. Saleh just said to us indicates that things might be unraveling. His rhetoric is the same as it was 3 weeks ago, which is that they are firmly opposed to any Turkish military activity in northern Iraq, and that it would pose complications, and that it would lead to the involvement of others of Iraq's neighbors in a conflict. And this is the same language that we were hearing, I don't know, 3 weeks ago. And that indicates that there is no deal. At the same time, Kurdish officials are also telling us that Americans will not be using one of the airfields here that has been prepared for American military use because the Turks are objecting. They're not allowing the overflight access. Now, if you put those two things together, you have to draw the conclusion that there is no deal involving what the Americans can do through Turkey, that it's up for grabs, that what the Turks will do in here is up for grabs, is unclear. And we're back to a sort of inchoate situation where it's impossible to predict what will happen.
Cameron, now earlier in our conversation, you suggested that Kurdish fighters at this point were actually more concerned about the Iraqi army, despite reports of some surrendering among the Iraqi army in the north, more concerned about the Iraqi army than about the Turkish army. Now, does this change the dynamics of all that?
Yes, there has. I mean, in the past couple of weeks, the Kurdish officials have been sounding much more relaxed about the Turkish problem, simply because the Turks and the Americans have not reached an agreement on the establishment of a northern front. And for them, that has, I mean, the logical conclusion is that the Americans will not then allow the Turks to commit to Iraq. That is, in fact, what seems to be happening. The Americans are willing to forego military access to Turkey's airspace in order to prevent the Turks from coming in. At the same time, it's very unclear because it seems that there's a determination on Turkey's part to come into this country during a conflict. And that's why I say all bets are off. It may be that the Turks will come in on their own. The Americans will object to that. The Kurds may fight it.
Cameron?
And, you know, we're back to the same sort of rhetoric we had a little while ago.
Thank you, Cameron. I'm going to break in now. We want to talk to our military analysts about what appears to be the outbreak of perhaps that shock and awe bombing campaign in Baghdad. Cameron Barr, thanks very much for joining us from northern Iraq.
Yes, Bill, we've brought a retired U.S. Air Force General, Tad Olstrom, back into the studio because CNN is reporting, and we should say we're only seeing this report on CNN, that this is the beginning of a day. General, what have you learned?
Unfortunately, what we've been able to learn is only those reports from CNN that essentially says there's an increased air activity in the area. Mainly, it's the surface defenses from Baghdad that has been firing without any sightings, without any big explosions on the ground. However, there have been some other signs, as we had mentioned early, with the launch of the B-52s out of England, which would signify a much larger attack maybe than we have seen so far. I would suspect that if we had a chance now to take a look at our embedded media in many different places, we'd find some more activities off of carriers, et cetera.
Well, General, well, thank you so much. And again, we'll keep our eye on this report only from CNN that this might be the beginning of the shock and awe campaign. A-Day, Aerial Day, is what the Pentagon is reported to be calling it.
Stay with us. There's more ahead, here and now.
Funding for Here and Now comes from the MathWorks, creators of MATLAB and Simulink technical computing software dedicated to accelerating the pace of discovery in engineering and science worldwide. Proudly supporting public radio and serving the community, information at MathWorks.com.
I'm Robin Young.
I'm Bill Delaney.
It's Here and Now.
Coming up, amid unprecedented media coverage, we'll look at how the war's being covered on a grand scale and very locally with our editorial roundtable.
Also, what are the laws of war?
And what's on the minds of American Iraqis watching a war unfold as U.S. troops storm into the country they come from? Mixed emotions.
These stories coming up here and now.
I'm Gina Cervetti. More explosions are being heard in Baghdad as anti-aircraft fire lights the night sky of the Iraqi capital. A heavy attack is anticipated for later today. In other developments, U.S. Marines are in full control of the strategic port city of Umm Qasr in southern Iraq. The Allies also suffered their first casualties, including a dozen American and British Marines killed in a helicopter crash that appeared to be accidental, and at least one U.S. Marine was the first to die in combat while advancing on a burning oil pump station. President Bush says U.S. forces in Iraq are making progress in their search for weapons of mass destruction. President Bush briefed members of Congress today on the war. He did not provide any details about Saddam Hussein's whereabouts or the status of the Iraqi regime. The president plans to spend the first weekend of the war with Iraq at Camp David. French President Jacques Chirac says France will not support a UN resolution allowing the U.S. and Britain to administer post-war Iraq. Secretary of State Colin Powell says the U.S. has clear goals for Iraq, and he hopes the French would want to be a part of that.
The liberation of Iraq is underway, and we want to do it in a way that will demonstrate to the world that we come as liberators, that we're going to put in place a better life for the people of Iraq, a representative form of government.
Meanwhile, Paul says the U.S. and Turkey are still trying to work out an agreement over the use of Turkish airspace. The U.S. wants to use the space to allow aircraft a more direct route into Iraq, but Turkey has delayed the opening of its airspace to U.S. overflights. A second day of global protests have brought some violence. In Yemen, a police officer and a demonstrator were shot to death, and dozens of others were injured. In San Francisco, protesters filled the financial district, vowing to disrupt traffic. Elsewhere, protesters blocked a main road near Michigan State University. And in Baltimore, demonstrators pretended to be dead and displayed signs reading, "This is what war looks like." Checking Wall Street at this hour, the Dow is up 117 points at 8403, and the Nasdaq Composite is ahead as well, 9 points, standing at 1412. It's 33 minutes past the hour, and you're listening to Here and Now.
I'm Robin Young.
I'm Bill Delaney.
It's Here and Now.
Well, we're turning now to our editorial roundtable. As CNN and NBC, as we've been saying, have been reporting now that the shock and wave bombardment of Baghdad, that massive bombardment of Baghdad military commanders have been hinting at for weeks now, may have begun. That could possibly involve thousands of cruise missiles in a 24 or 48 hour period. We have a landscape of fast breaking news here, and we have three news people with us to look at the fast breaking landscape of news. And also, I should say, in the course of our conversation, we'll bring you any more information we receive on the possible beginning of that shock and awe campaign. Bill Nemitz is a columnist for the Portland Press Herald in Portland, Maine. Hi, Bill.
Hi, Bill.
Pat Walker, editor of the Bucks County Courier, Times in Levittown, Pennsylvania. Hi, Pat.
Hi, Bill.
And our guest on the roundtable today, Mark Jerkovitz, who's media critic for the Boston Globe. Hi, Mark.
Good afternoon, Bill.
Well, Mark, things happening very fast here, of course, as they do in wartime, and yet we have unprecedented access to information, don't we, this time? You think back to the Persian Gulf War in 91. Well, there weren't a lot of cell phones. There weren't a lot of sat phones, let alone video phones. But with all the coverage, how are we doing? Have you got any quarrels with it?
Oh, yeah, I'm a media critic. If I didn't, I'd have right. to resign my post.
You're supposed to criticize.
You know, there are a lot of things to quarrel with, and there will be a lot of things to quarrel with in the days to come. But I think, frankly, the media story for the first couple of days has been, you know, sort of the reporters on the scene, many of them embedded, showing us sights, and again, many of them non-combat sights and sounds that we simply have not seen before in warfare. And, you know, I think it's fairly remarkable. Again, you know, when the rubber meets the road and we're engaged, or the, not we, or that's one of the things I'm going to criticize later on, when the United States is engaged in clearer combat. But just the, I just heard Tom Brokaw, from, as a matter of fact, just announced that 8 cruise missiles had been fired off of one United States ship based on what I think is a report from an ITN embedded correspondent. So on some level, you're getting real-time reporting that we haven't seen ever. I mean, the last war we had real access was Vietnam, but then people had to fly tapes back to New York from Asia. So this is in uncharted territory.
That's right. Bill Nemitz, so many journalists have embedded with military units, and many of them showing exemplary courage to get the story to us. But does embedding with a military unit in any way mean getting in bed with American foreign policy?
Well, I was watching last night on, I think it was MSNBC, and this very question was raised with both David Bloom and Kerry Sanders, who were out there on the sword's point, as they put it. And they were, what surprised me was how unabashed they were in acknowledging the kind of bonding that has already taken place between them and the troops. They were trying to counterweight that with their assurances that if they see anything bad or anything negative, they'll be the first ones to report it. But I think it's inevitable when you're traveling in a small group as they are, that you are going to, as the journalist, start to feel at least somewhat dependent on those guys you're rubbing elbows with.
Pat Walker of the Bucks County Courier-Times, Levittown, Pennsylvania. Does it bother you at all, this embedding?
Yes and no. I think it's the access is, at times, I would even in the first couple days describe it as overwhelming. You're sort of glued to the TV, but I think at some point it becomes too much. I do have concerns about them, the embedded journalists being too close, and right now we're seeing a quick advance, no fighting per se, no you know, hand-to-hand kind of combat. I wonder what will happen at that point.
That's right.
CNN is now reporting, by the way, I tell the three of you, huge explosions in Iraq. That's not any more major detail than we've had before, but it does seem like this massive bombardment has begun. Mark, is it good for us to have this in such real time?
We'll have to figure out those answers later. Good in terms of what the public should know, good in terms of the country's self-interest, good in terms of military strategy. That'll all have to be sorted out. But, you know, we're in the business of, you know, we have one basic credo here, which is all, you know, all information is good. As timely information as we can get is good. And, you know, that sort of has to be your fundamental belief until we sort out the implications later on. But it's, you know, I mean, we're already 3 days in a war, and we're seeing kind of a routine here, which is every day around noon, our time, all the networks go to, you know, shots of the Baghdad skyline waiting for the next phase in the bombing campaign. It's almost in some ways become routinized. The only other thing I'd say about shock and awe, which everybody's been reporting, is a cautionary note here, which is this war has not proceeded the way many in the media predicted it would. Remember, we have a Pentagon that is very proprietary about information, doesn't mind faking out the press, didn't mind faking out the press in the 1991 Gulf War. So I'd be a little cautious about what shock and awe may mean and what the Pentagon's been saying to us and what they actually plan to do.
I agree completely. I think what we're seeing so far is things going well. You know, everything's moving along. And I think what really happens now is what it'll be interesting to see if when troops start to engage or things become more heightened or more intense, then what does the Pentagon do? How will they shut out or will they stay as open?
I think the fascination right now isn't so much with what we're seeing, but with simply the fact that we're seeing it.
Yeah,
and
agreed.
That could change very quickly, particularly as we advance on Baghdad. I think, Mark, you're right, you know, there are going to have to be some very snap decisions made. In some cases, no decisions whatsoever, because it's going to be broadcast live and it's going to get out. It will be up to all of us after that, I suppose, to look back and examine whether or not it should have gotten out.
Bill Nemitz, as coverage becomes ever more up close and personal, though, and we've had these conversations since the first Gulf War at least, does the ability to sit in the comfort of your living room and watch shock and awe diminish somehow the immensity of what's happening, the terror that it will cause to 5 million residents of Baghdad?
I think there is a desensitization, but right now as I speak, we're dealing with a story here in Maine that is going to bring it home in a way no other thing can, and that is we just received word from a number of sources, including Senator Susan Collins' office, that two of these four Americans on the chopper that went down were from Maine. And so now everyone is trying to locate family, and you know, it's about to come home in a very, very graphic way up here.
Pat Walker, is this war ultimately, as we see polls now shift in a direction of support for the war, does it knit us together? We also see, heard earlier in our program, that the protests, for example, in San Francisco are much smaller today than they were yesterday. Are we being knit together as a nation?
I think that, again, that remains to be seen. I find it interesting in the coverage of television that the protests across the world are get mentioned, but they're not getting quite as mentioned as I would have expected that they would when tens of thousands of people across the world are protesting. Maybe not as much here. I think we have a tendency to rally behind the action once it starts to support the troops. But I think the worldwide protests deserve some attention.
Mark, I'd like to get your thoughts on that. Does the ability to sit down and watch this on a television as a nation, almost as if we would sit down and watch a completely different event like the Super Bowl, does it knit us together, and is that all okay with you?
Well, I think we are knit together, whether we were watching the war or not watching the war, although there's obviously a visceral impact here. American history is simple on this. Whatever the differences are, at least in the beginning, the nation unites behind an overwhelming urge that things go successfully and as quickly as possible. I think that's what's happening on some level. But I will say this, and I do believe this, the implications of the inability to get a United Nations resolution and the problems that the Bush administration have diplomatically give him considerably less wiggle room here, not only with an international audience, but I think with the American people. So, we are knit together today, but if we're here a month from now in some kind of a quagmire where things are going poorly, not only will I think international pressure be overwhelming, but I also think you'll see real fragmentation in this country. So I think that the president and this administration have got to prosecute this thing very successfully and reasonably quickly to maintain the level of political support that they have at this moment.
Bill Nemitz, an immensely powerful U.S. military machine, the most powerful military machine in the history of the world, is now going up against a bedraggled Saddam Hussein's bedraggled, relatively third world army. Do you think we're going to get enough, particularly in these early days, enough skepticism from embedded reporters, bringing not so much a rah-rah approach to it that we alluded to earlier as a questioning of this immense military force being used against not much of a foe in the end?
Well, I think there's going to have to be something to be skeptical about. And so far, there's been very little. I mean, we're seeing these columns rolling at 30, 40 miles an hour, which is lightning speed, up through Iraq. And we've seen occasional bunches of Iraqi soldiers waving white flags and putting themselves at the mercy of our troops. I really get the feeling as this evolves, that's why it's interesting as we speak what's going on in Baghdad right now, that we're still in somewhat of a pregame mode here, to use that Super Bowl analogy, and it's not going to be until Baghdad is completely encircled that we know whether there's anything to be skeptical about. No one really knows still at this point how much of a war this is going to be.
Bill, I'm going to jump away now, if I may, back to Robin Young, who has a breaking report.
Thanks, Bill. We have someone on the line from Baghdad. We've been reporting to you that both CNN, NBC, and other outlets are reporting that the Pentagon has said they've begun the shock and awe campaign, that awesome use of force against the city. So we are turning to Lisa Nijou, who is in Baghdad at the moment. She's a resident there. Lisa, are you on the line?
Hi.
Hi, Lisa. What are you seeing in Baghdad?
I'm in the heart of Baghdad, along the Tigris River. The street is called Abu Nawas. Mm-hmm. I'm at the Al Sanar Hotel.
And are you hearing? What are you hearing?
Right now, the place is eerily quiet. We've had two nights of bombardment already, but nothing to do with the carpet bombing that we were promised, or the shock and awe. Everybody was braced, terribly braced for something terrible to happen. The tension is a little bit less, but at the same time a little bit more, because people don't know what is going on.
Well, Lisa, we're going to talk to you a few more seconds, take a quick break, and then come back to you. But we are hearing here reports that carpet bombing has begun, and CNN showed one explosion. You didn't see or feel or hear anything there.
There were a few explosions earlier on, like a half an hour ago or an hour ago, yeah. But that's it so far.
Lisa, we're going to come right back to you. We're going to take a break, and we'll find out, you know, what is really going on. We appreciate so much you're hanging on the line in Baghdad. Lisa Najew, a resident of Baghdad at a hotel there. You're listening to Here and Now. We'll be back in a few seconds to bring you any news on the war in Iraq. I'm Robin Young.
I'm Bill Delaney.
This is Here and Now, and we are back with reporting on what is happening in Baghdad. CNN, NBC, MSNBC, rather, and several other outlets are reporting that the Pentagon has begun its intense air campaign. It's calling it A-Day for Aerial Bombardment Day. But we have on the line Lisa Najew. She is in Baghdad at the moment. And in fact, Lisa, I've just actually been informed you're with the Voices in the Wilderness campaign out of Montreal.
Yeah.
I was misinformed.
I'm sorry, I couldn't hear you.
That's okay. It's under pretty stressful circumstances. I apologize for telling you this news that the Pentagon is reporting that this intense air campaign has started, but you're telling us that you're not hearing or feeling anything there.
Well, what I heard here was an hour ago a little bit of bombing, and that it stopped since then. It's been fair. I mean, we know that the B-52s left the UK at noon today, and we are expecting something, but we don't know what.
We should say we also heard an ITV reporter out of London speaking on CNN earlier, and he said the same thing, that he went to his balcony and it was an eerily calm city. But earlier, Lisa, we saw huge anti-aircraft fire tracers going across the sky. We should remind people, Baghdad is a big city. So what is the sense of people there right now?
People are bracing themselves here. The people here are very, very calm, very. There's no panic anywhere. People go lock everything up and are bracing themselves for whatever is to come. That's the sense here. It's terrible. It's tragic.
We should say also that Al Jazeera is reporting airstrikes on Mosul, M-O-S-U-L, about 150 miles from Baghdad. And there's also reports of Tomahawk missiles launching from Navy submarines offshore. Lisa, are you able during the day, it's nighttime there right now in Baghdad, during the day, are you able to move about freely? Is there a sense that there's less of the government there than there was 2 days ago?
People are able to move around rather freely, but they don't. There's not a lot of people circulating in the streets. You can see a little bit of traffic, but that's it. We can go about as we please. Journalists are probably more closely watched, but It's you know, if you go around, if you go along the street and you hit, like, let's say, a military point, you can say hello and exchange candy if you want to. It's a very nice people here.
Well, Lisa, we are in the fog of war right now, right in the thick of it. And so I'm going to say that in addition to the reports that we're hearing on ABC now has joined the outlets reporting that the shock and awe campaign has begun. We're now seeing an AP report quoting a senior U.S. official saying the escalation of the aerial campaign might not be as intense as originally planned. The official says surrender talks with senior Iraqi officials are continuing. And earlier today, we heard Colin Powell say that there were conversations with Iraqi officials still ongoing. So, again, you're right in the thick of things, and I hope this isn't making you even more nerve-wracked to hear about this. We're going to be joined now with someone who knows a little bit about the area that you're in, Lisa, if you could just hold on the line there, because we've been wondering how Iraqis living in America are reacting to the war that is unfolding back home with their families and friends still there. Joining us in the studio is Leth Hadi. He came to the U.S. as a student in 1982. He works as a computer applications developer in Cambridge, Massachusetts. Leth, hello. Am I saying your name correctly?
Leth.
Leth. Well, Leth, welcome, and thank you so much for joining us. Leth, this has got to be equally difficult for you sitting here watching the pictures of the camera focused on Baghdad. Your thoughts?
Well, it has been very stressful. It's very difficult to be sitting here thinking about my family, my wife's family back home. We were able to talk to them, fortunately, actually this morning. They're doing okay, but it's an uncomfortable feeling to have and to think about, like, your people back home. Overall, though, I think, you know, I feel good about what's going on because I think it's good that finally we're going to get a chance to get rid of the regime that is governing in Iraq.
Yeah. Lisa, in Baghdad, what can you tell Leth about the state of the city right now after several – this may not be the start of the aerial bombardment campaign, but there have been bombings. What's the state of the city right now?
The city is very quiet right now.
But, I mean, what's been the effect of the bombings that have happened already?
So far, what we know is one government building was hit, and the count of deaths is like 54 deaths in two days and 16 wounded. I'm to go to the hospital tomorrow and see a little bit more about what that looks like, but so far it's not been, I mean it's bad, but it's not anything like what we could imagine it could have been. That's why maybe it's still to come.
Or as we're saying, we hasten to say there are now reports coming over the wire that maybe it won't come. And this is, again, the fog of war. Well, Lisa Niju in Baghdad, you're also being listened to very closely by someone we have on the line. Mudaffer is, and he asked us only to use his first name, is joining us by phone. He works at a gas station in Dorchester, Massachusetts, and I'm sure he's eagerly listening to your report from Baghdad. Mudaffer?
Yes.
Hello. Your thoughts about, well, first of all, how long have you been in this country, and do you also have family in Baghdad?
Yes, ma'am, I do.
And your thoughts today?
Can you hear me now?
Yes, I'm sorry. Go ahead, Mudaffer.
Yeah, I'm just wishing nobody in my shoes or anyone would experience the tough time I'm going through now.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, it's beyond any language to describe it. I mean, seeing, hearing, knowing that people you lived with, you relate to, the most loving people in your life getting bombed like that, and I'm just hoping no harm will get closer to them or hurt them.
And Mudaffer, we are hearing reports from CNN right now that even though Lisa can't hear them, there are apparently huge explosions on the outskirts of Baghdad. We also have Leth here in the studio with us. There are reports that Saddam Hussein might have been in one of the bunker buildings that was so heavily bombed, and he might be injured. Obviously, this is what's your sense of how Iraqi people will react to this regime change that is hoped for by the U.S.?
Jubilation. I mean, I hope that what he's saying is true. I hope that that he actually got hit, and this is maybe the day that hopefully we'll get rid of this, of him and his regime. We've been wishing for this for 20 years, more than 20 years now. What he has done to the country, to the people in Iraq, is just terrible.
Yeah, and Mudaffer, at the gas station in Dorchester, I know that you came to this country with quite a bit of education. What was your life in Baghdad, in Iraq?
Yeah, my life used to be like anyone else, which is going from a war to another war, being silent most of the time. Mm-hmm. Suffering a very, very evil or very worse kind of dictatorship regime.
And I know, Mudaffer, you fought against Saddam Hussein in the 91 war.
Yes, ma'am, I did.
When there was a sense there might be a, quote, liberation, which never happened. Lisa?
And I do. I mean, anyone who experienced the uprising in 91 would know that U.S. and the Allied army hold a huge responsibility of having this uprising failed.
Yeah. Lisa Nishu, in Baghdad, we're still hearing reports of heavy anti-aircraft fire in Baghdad, explosions. Explosions on the outskirts of the city. Lisa, your sense of your own safety right now?
I don't feel particularly unsafe, but I don't feel particularly safe either. It's just expectation. I think the worst thing is not knowing, I think.
Yeah. Well, Lisa, we just beg you to be as safe as you can. We're seeing pictures of anti-aircraft fire and tracers in the sky above Baghdad. Mudaffer, thank you so much for joining us on the phone.
Do you mind if I say something, if you don't mind?
Very quickly. I'm sorry, because we're closing.
Yeah,
but
I wish innocent people or civilian would not get in the middle and get justified by getting killed and justified by anyone, by Saddam Hussein or by U.S. forces.
Yeah.
So I'm hoping they put morality first, then forces second.
Thank you.
Thank you so much.
All of you, take care. Leif, thank you so much for joining us in the studio.
Here and Now is a production of WBUR Boston.
I'm Robin Young.
I'm Bill Delaney.
Get into your radio.
And join us again, Here and Now.
Funding for Here and Now comes from the MathWorks, creators of MATLAB and Simulink technical computing software. Information on the web at mathworks.com. Web at mathworks.com.